oral history interview with Dr. John H. Woditz, retired professor of organic chemistry at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, who is also noted for his work in the history of chemistry. I'm Herbert T. Pratt, a friend of Dr. Woditz for 20 years or more. John, I thought I'd like to cover your life story in more or less in four stages. First of all, personal, the childhood, growing up, education. Then your professional life in chemistry, followed by professional life in history. And finally, a summation of your major accomplishments, disappointments, etc., with maybe some odds and ends thrown in. John, I know you were born in Czechoslovakia, but where?
I was born in town of Moravská Ostrava. Moravská means Moravian Ostrava because the river divided this town into Moravian Ostrava and Silesian Ostrava. So consequently, we were on a border with Silesia, major portion being in Germany at that time, and the other Silesian was a Polish Silesian. So in a tri-state area, one interesting thing is, years later, I was in Poland under the auspices of our National Academy of Sciences, and we'll mention this later on. But I was in Poland, and they say, "Is this the first time in Poland?" I said, "Poland, it's the first time, but I've been in the city before, because I knew the city which I was visiting at the time as Breslau, which is now Wroclaw." So I had to acknowledge, yes, I come so close, but I've never been in Poland, but have been in this Polish city that is now Wroclaw.
That's very good. Now, what was it? When were you born? What date?
1919. That was right after the war, World War One. And jumping ahead, I left Czechoslovakia in 1939. So I lived my European life entirely in the 20 years during the duration of the First Czech Republic.
Right, and you're born on April 12th, if I...
We're born on April 12th. Fool's Day.
And, okay, now, tell me something about your parents.
My parents came from southern Bohemia. Dad was born in the town of Strakonice. My mother in a neighboring town of Vodňany. It was an arranged marriage, as I understand. Now, Dad studied civil engineering in Prague, at the Technical University in Prague. Mother went to finishing school and did not have any formal education, but I don't know what they were teaching in finishing school. Dad was, during the war, an officer in the old Austrian-Hungarian army. He was building bridges, being a graduate civil engineer. And this became his specialty later on in life. But how he happened to come and live in a town of Ostrava, I don't know. I never asked him why Ostrava.
Your father majored in civil engineering, and he was a bridge builder. Yeah. Any rivers in that town, or
no? I mean, that's it's what I'm so curious about. He had that army experience of building destroyed bridges during World War One, but he became an contractor, engineering contractor, and built or developed his own company, rather prominent in the post World War One period in the country of Czechoslovakia, because he was not only building bridges, he was building housing developments, highways, anything that a civil engineer would be competent, and built his own office staff and specialists in each area.
Well, then your family, just looking at, listening to you talk about it, education-wise and so forth, you were certainly beyond, you would be beyond upper-middle-class family, I would say. You had advantages.
It's very difficult to differ with you.
Okay.
My brother, I had a brother born in 1914. He wanted to become an attorney, a lawyer. The dad says, no way, you're going to take over the enterprise. You're going to study engineering. So although my brother had a classical high school that included Latin and Greek, but no descriptive geometry, he had to study descriptive geometry on a side so that he qualified to enter the technical university in Prague, which he did eventually. And coming to America later on, he eventually became a director at Union Carbide in the construction.
Oh, he did. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Died on a golf course, as good directors
always do. Okay. How long has he been there?
My brother, let's see, we were living in Ohio, that must have been in the 1960s.
Okay. So, well, but was he considerably older than you?
4 years.
Four years. Okay.
Again, jumping ahead, I became chairman of the chemistry department at Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. My brother lived in Charleston, West Virginia.
So you're just 50 miles apart.
So when I was introduced in a chemical circles in Charleston, we had joined meetings, chemistry meetings. The introduction usually went, Professor John Waters, Frank's brother.
He was well known. Yes. He was very well known. Did you have sisters?
No.
No sisters. So just the two children. What is your earliest memories of childhood?
I mean, it sounds sort of self-serving or sort of a boastful. We had a very life, a very easy life, because, yes, we were a prominent family with anything that we wanted. I mean, we had a maid. We had just a maid for us. What the German called Kinderfräulein. There's no equivalent name in English. We had a cook and an assistant to the cook. We had a chauffeur. We were also helped in our studies with a private tutor. We had to take piano lesson. My brother took violin lesson. And since my father decided that we don't know German well enough, our mother tongue was Czech well enough, I had to take special lesson. Although German was taught in a Czech high school from the first grade on, he thought, well, it's better to be quite fluent. So I had to study German on the side. And we were bilingual in that respect. Everybody in Central Europe was bilingual in the old Austrian monarchy, and later on either native language plus German or native language plus Hungarian being in the monarchy.
Your father sounds like he was an authority. In other words, what he said went, and I would assume he was sort of a product of his own times.
He was a self-man. He was the CEO of what we would call of a striving construction business. But he would come and have lunch at home. He would take a 15-20 minute nap, at home, not in his office, and then he would go again. That's not unusual, that's European.
Okay.
Like, at dinner time, the maid had to go for fresh on a draft beer. We wouldn't drink beer out of a bottle because that's not good enough. So she would stand in line with the other maids and wait till the foam settles. So they put some more beer that was foaming up, and the gossip was exchanged between all the other maids.
Oh, that's fascinating. You had a tutor, but what about your early schooling?
Well, I mentioned my dad essentially forced my older brother into engineering. I, being the younger of the two, there was no pressure on me what I will study. I had a tutor at home, and he always said, well, what are you going to be? What interest do you have? Play tennis or went skiing. That was my primary interest. So he brought some chemicals while he was visiting, just to create an interest. And that's how I started in chemistry. I had a laboratory where I was devising experiments to impress the maids or something like that. You know what it is, color, explosion,
yes,
and the conventional way.
How old were you then, about 12?
Oh, I was 12. Yeah, something like that,
okay.
Yes. Not knowing the danger of the experiment that
sure,
I was doing.
Sure.
And I was free to choose, and that's how I started in chemistry. So, well, might as well. That Judah always despaired. Well, what is going to come of you? You know, you are not going to follow your brother into your dad's business. And I said, well, I will study chemistry, and I can bear down if and time demands it. And that turned out to be exactly true.
In your what I would call high school, were you into anything? You mentioned you liked tennis, you liked skiing, but were there any organized sports? I don't know how the school
well,
operated.
Well, the interesting thing, I was not an outstanding scholar or student. I mean, I maintained a B-minus type of average. You mentioned sports. Well, it's an interesting incident I remember. Skiing was my primary. I was a racer and then a downhill skier, and I won many events. One event that I particularly remember was a state championship. I won that race for my school, high school. On Monday morning, I came with a traveling trophy and presented it to the principal of the school, and he said, well, when was that race? I said, it was last Saturday. Well, when did you arrive at the race? Oh, I was there on Friday. You mean you cut classes? And he threw me out of the office. Honestly, goodness. And so that's appreciation that I received winning the state championship.
You mentioned your tutor. Did you have any other, and apparently that tutor had a big effect on your life. Were there any other teachers that you had along the way from early on that
well,
stand out?
I don't know what it's called in English, the teacher that presides over other teachers in a particular grade. What is it called?
Oh, we would call them, I think we'd call them supervisors here.
Well,
but,
there was a woman, and she taught Czech and French. And I had always relied on my tutor to prepare me for the announced exam. Except one day, she gave an unannounced examination. And I had to improvise. I had to write. And the examination paper came back with, you know, excellent. It's the first time I did something on completely on my own, and she really built up my self-confidence.
Yeah, that's great. I have a feeling that you might have been somewhat mischievous when you, especially when you were young. Were you?
Well, I had many girlfriends.
Oh, many girls. Oh, okay. Many girlfriends. Okay.
Many girlfriends, yes.
Yeah.
And we'll say something on a record. We had a city park, and the park closed for the night, and the keeper would go through the park ringing a bell. That meant people have to leave because the gate will be closed. Well, we didn't leave. We stayed over. And my girlfriend had to jump over the fence. And while jumping down, she caught her dress on a fence and ripped it from bottom up. And then she had to go, of course, home with a ripped dress in her back. Poor girl, I felt so sorry for her.
You didn't have to go along and face the music with her, though.
No.
Well, is there anything else, any other story you'd like to share about those early days?
No, it's relatively easy to refer to because I did what was expected, but I did not anything more.
Okay.
Less.
All right. You weren't a playboy, though.
That's a relative term.
Okay.
Because in one opinion it could be in excess, in other one there was no.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's move to higher education. Let's move to college days. You started college in Czechoslovakia, and I would assume from what I've seen the American Mental Science you did 2 years there.
I graduated from high school in 1937, and in the spring, and I started what was the official name? The Technical Institute for Chemistry and Engineering, part of the Technical University, which was a university within a university. And I started in fall of 1937. I finished 2 semesters in chemical engineering, which involved a lot of basic chemistry, not just engineering. I finished 2 in the fall and spring semester in 1938. The political crisis started in 1938. The Germans, well, no, let's say something else. There was a general mobilization. The Czechoslovakia did not rely at that time on the Grand Entente that supposedly protected the invasion by the Germans. Was underwritten by France and Great Britain, especially France. Schools did not open at that time. The schools were closed because students were mobilized. I was not of army age. I was only 1938. I was 18 years old. Not quite 18. So I wasted the summer, and Dad says the school are not going to open. The country is going to be occupied. You're going to finish your schooling in the United States, and made the necessary preparation. My brother and I were to go to the United States to finish. I finished my education, and my brother had employment building the Czechoslovak pavilion That's a 1939, the world's fair. Well, again, not doing it in chronological order, the schools never opened in Czechoslovakia because when the German invaded, all higher education stopped. Again, refreshing your memory, Czechoslovakia was partitioned after the famous meeting of Chamberlain in Munich, Germany. The Munich agreement separated the German-speaking part of Czechoslovakia, where the German had more than 20% representation. My home city, or our home city of Ostrava, had only 19% of German population. So consequently, it was not part of the so-called Sudetenland. And here I must say, the Sudetenland in America means something. It has no meaning whatsoever historically. This, if you look at the boundaries of Bohemia and Moravia, they have never changed throughout the ages because their natural boundaries follow the mountain ridges. It was never any change. So the Sudetenland sort of excised the border towns or region that had more than 20% German population. And the universities, after German took over, never reopened the way before. I think it took them a year before any higher education was permitted in the Czech-speaking lands. So I was able to go to America only after the Munich Agreement, because the Czech had to demobilize. They had to dispose of the army. Also, I was not of military age, but the entire military age group which I grew into never went to military service because there was no army anymore. And the German never trusted the Czech-speaking population. So the Czech-speaking lands sat on the sidelines and sort of turned out to be excellent kibitzes of other people fighting. Well, I came to America in February 1939. I got permission to leave the country to go and study. I was on an Aquitania crossing the Atlantic from Cherbourg to New York.
Well, did you have any relatives over here?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I came from the daughter of the relatives in New Jersey,
okay,
who made it possible for me be here. I mean, at that time, people needed a quota. Every nationality had an immigration quota, not like it's now. It's a complete change. The quota system has been abandoned, and anybody who wants to wade across the border, the Rio Grande, will enter, or things like that. No, it was originally for quotas. And it was, again, my dad who saw the events 5 years in advance. More when Germany marched into Austria, he said, long overdue, I must make every effort to let you come to America. And he contacted, it was a cousin, a second cousin of him, and they provided the financial background so that we don't become a ward of the state affidavit. And he had the tickets ready and everything. He just waited for the moment. I was not under the military obligation. And my brother and I, he got the job with Pavillon, and I went ahead. And our parents incidentally followed us 1 year later.
Your parents did come 1 year later. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, well, okay. He started liquidating his business about for 5 years, last 5 years. He said, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind the whole country will be overrun by Germany. I mean, the foresight mean, it's absolutely astounding now when I say most people said, no way, Britain and England will never permit this. But they did permit it, of course. That was the October Munich agreement. But he had tickets ready, mind you. I mean, this was October. The country was divided in October, and we 38, and we were on Aquitania in January of 39.
How did you feel about leaving home? Did you have
sad,
very sad?
And when I go back, or I had some former schoolmate, we sort of reminisce how we sat down, and the question was, will I obey my father's order, or will I go and stay? I wanted to fight, and I did fight eventually. I was a member of the U.S. Army.
The U.S. Army, right. Right. Did you know English when you came?
Smother, likely. Now, interesting thing is, we also had an English tutor in our home, a fellow named Bill Wembley from England. He was to teach English in our family, live with us as a guest, essentially. He was provided with spending money and all, and he took one of the bedroom. And, he was of my brother's age. My brother learned quite a bit, mother too, from him, from that Englishman. And I was too young. I mean, I was not invited in the escapades or anything like that. So my brother knew English rather well. I, obviously, something rubbed off on me.
What were your first impressions of America and of Americans getting here?
I used to keep a diary, and I wrote down going past the Statue of Liberty. That was very corny.
Very corny.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You still have that diary?
Yeah, somewhere.
Sure. That's a good historical piece.
Yeah.
If you still have it.
I still have it.
So you left, and then you met your brother. Your brother, had he already come, or did
No, we came.
We came together.
Yes.
Okay.
We, that was Norfolk Island, World Exposition. He was commuting over here. Went out there. I don't remember. My relatives, the ones in New Jersey, took it upon themselves. They wanted to help me get settled. I wanted to go to school. I was to receive tuition payment from my dad, from family. That never materialized because there were financial restriction of exporting cash, etc. So suddenly I was on my own, so to speak. Well, the first thing is learn English. Then question of serendipity kicked in. Friends of my relative saw an article in the New York Times where Furman University has a scholarship for students from Czechoslovakia, and nobody can come. And that was administered through the international an international body for exchange studies. And it was suggested, since I'm already in the States, why don't I apply? And I said, my record is not an outstanding one that would merit an international scholarship. So I said, well, try it anyway. And I did. And sure enough, I became a student or received a scholarship to Furman University, F-U-R-M-A-N, in Greenville, South Carolina. The term, the fall term, already started. I came about two or three weeks late, which was very difficult. Even if I would have started with the rest of the students, it would have been difficult, not knowing the language. But it was a big event in my life, because I learned what an honest Christian university can do. The faculty came to my room, they helped me out. People essentially went out of their way to make me feel at home. And I'm an enthusiastic supporter from now.
No, that's most fascinating. I had in my questions to ask, how in the world did you get to a Baptist school in the South? And now you've just explained that.
Well, it was absolutely a different life. Bible study, compulsory. Sunday, two services, noon and evening. And there were no black faces at that time.
No.
It's the first time I really understood what Yankee means. Because every American in Europe was a Yankee. But we were eating in a refectory, in a dining room, at assigned seating at a table. And there was one fellow from Pittsburgh. "Pass the grits, you damn Yankee." And I said, "Well, what is it all about?"
Yeah.
And grits, I finally learned what it is. But "you damn Yankee," there was one word.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. It was one word.
One word.
Yeah. So, I had wondered if you had culture shock in going to the South, but because
I did not know the North either.
So it was okay.
Sure.
So,
I did not know the difference.
And in that religious, you've answered my questions about in that religious community, you found the people extremely helpful, extremely kind, extremely
absolutely
supportive. That's
absolutely
most interesting.
Absolutely.
Because they probably didn't have any more understanding of somebody from overseas than you did of them.
Well, this international scholarship started by a professor of philosophy who studied in Prague with our first president, at that time just Professor Masaryk, and became a big follower of the philosophies that Masaryk, M-A-S-A-R-Y-K, Masaryk, was propounding, and that's why he came back, raised money, and invited somebody to come from that country. He took a great liking to Czechoslovakia. As you may or may not know, it was in the news frequently. I was invited to give talks at certain churches or Rotary or Lions or whatever, some service clubs. I developed some kind of notoriety because somebody had a speaker, didn't show up. I was always on call.
It's interesting. Then, of course, you had already made up your mind you were going to study chemistry.
Oh, yes.
And so how did you find the chemistry department there? I mean,
well, the
I
chemistry
guess that
department had a department chairman, fellow named Sampy. S-A-M-P-E-Y, Sampy. And he was a pioneer in teaching chemistry in the South. Furman had an association with John Hopkins through a visiting scientist, a retired DuPont researcher, E. Emmett Reed.
Oh, yeah.
And it boosted, I say it was self-made propaganda, but they thought they have the second best department in the South, next to Duke University, the chemistry department, especially under the tutelage of John Sampy, and his student came on as a faculty fellow named Sussman. Incidentally, those books that I gave you came from the library,
oh.
Professor Sousa, because they all took liking to me. And I made 4 years in two.
I wondered that the numbers didn't add up when I was looking at your record, right?
Well, the point is a very simple one. America, and that is true, that was true then as it is now, European high schools are equivalent to junior college. So I came to Furman University, I started learning English, comprehend English, and I said, gee, I know that subject matter. And I started taking proficiency exam. So I started as a freshman in 1939, and I graduated in 1941. Taking a full load, 18 hours, semester hours, a semester, plus taking a proficiency examination. People still look at it and wonder, like you did. Because, yes, I had calculus before. Yes, I had foreign language, but I could have proficiency out taking German or French, or Czech letters by a foreign language. No, but I took Spanish, because I wanted to learn Spanish, something that I did not know at that time. And I was taking organic chemistry, I was taking analytical simultaneously, I started doing research. And I was cut grass and did some tutoring myself at that time. It was a full, very occupied day or week. And then the only way I relaxed is get into some Sunday morning or evening services, so I could go.
You knew Elijah Hicks.
Very well.
Lige Hicks, we called him, because I worked for Lige once. And
well, Lige for a short Hicks, time. I mean, I caught up with Lige, because he graduated in 1941. So we are in the same class. Lige Hicks was a very good fellow. He helped out, mind you. I got a lot of help, good help.
Well, he had an amazing ability. I won't get off into that, but he had an amazing ability to remember names and faces.
Yeah.
And he took over our organization, and the first time I ever saw him, I met him on the street away from any of the buildings at DuPont, and he called me by name. And but what he had done was he had studied what we call the mugshot book of his organization. He had about 150 people. And he had studied that, and he had memorized all the faces, and he could call me by name, and that was extremely impressive.
Well, he sent, when my name started appearing in journals and so on, he always sent a congratulations and greetings or something like that. He became the chairman of our graduating class, and I saw him at one of the anniversary of 25 or 30 years in Greenville, and he was the chair of that meeting. Incidentally, he lives in Sarasota, Florida now.
Yes. I knew he came up for, we have an annual Christmas party, and he was here, I can't remember whether it was this year or last year, but he asked about you, and he knew that we had some kind of a contact. He asked about you.
Well,
He's still a very young-looking man, you know.
Well, he must have taken early retirement.
Well, I guess like a lot of us, I'm sure he did.
Now, Lige had a younger brother, also studying chemistry.
Didn't know anything about him.
Yeah, he about 2 years younger, because he started with me in class of 39. I finished in 41. I caught up with his older brothers. So sometimes this gets confused.
Yeah,
here,
okay.
You know.
All right. You mentioned Emmett Reed.
Yeah.
Emmett Reed was a consultant to DuPont, and a man that never really stopped. He had, of course, taught at Johns Hopkins. He was a devout Baptist. I didn't know about that connection. he had with Farman.
He would have, as I said, when he retired from DuPont General Hospital, he would come on a train. This was already, his neck was a little stooped, carrying a little satchel. And I had several times been asked to pick him up at the railroad station. So he got to know me and carry his satchel when he was visiting. And he gave me a research project. With all the...
He did?
That's right. I was to run a Friedel-Crafts reaction in the presence of sulfur. And interesting thing was, I learned a very valuable lesson. I run those reactions, typical Friedel-Crafts, which uses aluminum chloride as a catalyst. And there was something going on, and I would crystallize and recrystallize to get a pure product. And I had a nice, sharp metal. When we sent it for carbon hydrogen analysis, it showed zero. I crystallized the sulfur. And this was a value.
Reed was an expert on sulfur chemistry.
Well, I know that.
And, so he was he pulling your leg?
No. He wanted to see what sulfur would do in a Friedel-Crafts.
Okay, all right.
He also wrote an autobiography.
Oh, yes, I have it.
100 years.
Yes, right. And it is on the inside, it says an interim report.
A lot of humor.
I liked Reed because in Reed's, he didn't give up. When he was 98 and had gone blind, with the help of graduate students, he wrote a book on, I'm paraphrasing, how to read technical Russian. That was 2 years before his autobiography came out. I think he died at 101, 102, something like that.
He must have been in the late 70s or 80s when I knew him.
Yeah, well,
It is perhaps the Department of Chemistry at Marshall and the other Baptist school that he was visiting really were in the forefront of the number of publications they created with the number of undergraduate students. So Hicks has some. He was influenced by E. Emery and Professor Sampi. Now, Professor Sampi, the chairman, was a John Hopkins graduate, I believe. But he will turn up again later on. Okay. I will mention because it's another connection.
All right, I'll have to look up Sampi in one of my American Renaissance books.
Yes.
You graduated from Furman, and now you show up at another Baptist school, which is the University of Richmond.
That's the same connection.
Okay.
Reed, he was also consulting with University of Richmond, with a department chairman named Ryland. Reed knew of my weaknesses, lack of experience, cramming in a lot of chemistry in a short time. He recommended Hicks to go to graduate school, I think it was Duke, or one of the Ivy Leagues. Mm-hmm. But for me, he recommended University of Richmond. That's how I ended up. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any memorable experiences at Richmond? You were there a couple of years, but...
I got my master's degree. It was in an area of polyhydroxyamines. It was a stepping stone because I wanted a PhD degree, not a master's degree. I realized very early that a master's degree under a doctorate degree is not as valuable as a PhD. Later on I came to recognition that many times it's awarded as a Booby Prize. PhD students later on who couldn't finish their research or It's a terminal degree. So far I was cognizant even at that early time. Well, after 2 years, the question came, where do you want to go next? And I said, I would like to go for a PhD degree. I sent out X number of